This programme was made with the support of the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland.
Hello and welcome to Lovers of Life, a series that explores Dublin's independent music scene in 2013. In this episode, we look at the music the bands are creating, we talk to music shops, record shops and mastering studio engineers, and we look at how artists are promoting themselves in 2013. First up, we talk to CFIT about how they write their music.
The majority of songs, or pretty much all songs, I think, would start from me having at least a sketch of a song. And then, it can go so many ways. Like, there are times where we'll bring it in and we'll jam it out and we'll kind of figure out where it's going. There are times where I'll just mess around with it on the computer and do a terrible, tinny, computery sketch of a song, which will give the gist of it. And then usually it gets to a point where we've done all the recording on it and we know how the song will sound, and at that point usually I'll get drunk and take it apart and completely rework it in a different way. Like, on our first album there's a song called Great Pressure, which it's the first song on it, and up until about a week and a half before it was going into mastering, which was a date that was locked, it was this slow build of a song that started quite low and just got louder and louder and louder, and then myself and Dave, who was my friend who was co-producing the first album, just got really bored with it and ended up cutting it up, and now it kind of, it has like peaks and troughs, and so, like, yeah, you can go too far with it, but at the same point, that's something, I think it's kind of from film, the idea of you shoot the film and then when you're editing it you can actually make a completely different film. Yeah. So that's something that happens a lot with our songs.
Stephen McCann from The Yips, Polyphonic X, and Stephen Jacob from Punchface Champions talked about creating their music.
Well, I mean, The Yips is like a collective of people going, I think this should happen, I think that should happen, and coming up with ideas pretty much on the spot and working around that. Whereas Colour Sound is like one guy would have an idea for a whole song, really, and then everyone adds to it. So it's completely two different ball games altogether. I find music very like football. So you have to train to be good. So that's why I'm like, you know, twice a week each band, you know, because you want to be the best band in the fucking world. Like, that's the reality. And technology's great because you can send each other emails of ideas, like, and then people, like, then you get to rehearsal and people know what you're playing because they've listened to it loads. It's amazing. I mean, we're very lucky in that sense. But yeah, it'd be completely different kettle of fish, because, I mean, the guys in Colour Sound are studying songwriting and BIM, so that's amazing for me, because I'd see myself as a bit of a songwriter and a guitar player as well. But like, I'd be bouncing ideas off them, and they, you know, it's great because I've never had that before. I've always had the guitarist side of it and I've never had the songwriter side of it. So yeah, I'm very lucky in that sense. And in The Yips as well, that's just guitar songwriting as well. So
what is the song from? Yeah, for me it's from, you know, you could be playing a beat or just a certain sound and you're working it, it makes you feel good, and we kind of working it from there, kind of thing. And then you can just add your lyrics, try and get some lyrics with some meaning if you can.
And then sometimes you'll end up with a 7-minute song, and sometimes it'll be 2 minutes. Yeah, if that's the way it works, that's the way it works. Yeah, it's refreshing to not have to worry about fucking 3 minutes.
Restrictions or ideas of like the song should be 3 minutes long, because it's a pop song. It can be 10 minutes, it can be just one song for a whole EP. You have less restrictions with it, so it's good.
Music Minds is an instrument shop based beside the Halfpenny Bridge. I asked John, who works there, what it's like running a music shop in 2013.
Fairly tough, Alan, to be brutally frank. That said, it's still a lot of fun, and it's far from the worst job I've ever had. You know, our main problem at the moment is like an awful lot of people buying stuff online, which... I mean, you mentioned bricks and mortar. I always love the bricks and mortar music shop. I like to be able to walk in, pick stuff up, try it out, talk to people who've used it. Only yesterday, because I'm a bit of a geek with some of this stuff, I was in a music shop down in Carlow when I was on my day off, and I was in talking to the lads, and, you know, there's no substitute for someone's personal experience when it comes to buying stuff. You can read some online review from some guy who you probably shouldn't trust, but I'd rather what I'd always rather talk to someone who I feel knows what he's doing, you know.
So, I mean, it's obviously, it's tough for everybody in a recession to try and, you know, make a business take over. But what sort of innovative ways have you been kind of trying to build that customer base? Or,
well, to be honest, where we're located here, I mean, we're in Lower Liffey Street here, right beside the Houghton Bridge. We're in the middle of all the gig venues, the rehearsal rooms and all that sort of stuff around here. And even though, like, we're here 7 days a week and we're, you know, we try to make ourselves very available for our customers and stuff like that. Obviously, a lot of the gigs are on at night. All the shops are shut at night. So we have our vending machines in the Grand Social. We've one in Sweeney's. We've another one in Ballyfermot Senior College and one in Ballymun Post Office out there as well. So, you know, when you're stuck at night for your set of strings or your plex, that's where you go. I mentioned the internet earlier as being a sort of bad thing in one way. It's also a very good thing in another way. You know, we do try to be there to, you know, people can connect with us on our Facebook page. We have a Twitter page and stuff like that. And anyone who asks us sort of questions or advice or anything like that, you know, we really do try to help them out, you know. And we find that that sort of thing works. You know, we're not the biggest music shop in Dublin, but we just try to, because we are musicians, you know, so we are our customers ultimately. You know, it's not that long ago that, I mean, you mightn't think it to look at us, we're all baldy owl lads now, but it's not that long ago that we were all the sort of greasy haired young fellas in black t-shirts hanging around the guitar shop on a Saturday. And a little bit of help when you're, you know, starting out effectively can go a long, long way.
If a band came to you and said, we're looking to do some recording at home, what would be the three or four pieces of equipment that you'd put into their hands or suggest to them?
Yeah, a good audio interface, a good condenser microphone, and other than that, a decent mic stand and a pop shield so that their recording is clean, you know.
Yeah.
That really is all they need, you know. When you've got an interface that has preamps built into it, you just plug your instruments straight into it. You don't need to be lugging amps around or anything like that at all. It's all very self-contained. You can all sit around the dining room table and record your masterpiece, you know. Nearly everybody these days recording on their computer. The old four-track cassette job is long gone, you know. But that said, I mean, like, for what we, back in, you know, the 80s and into the early 90s, what you used to pay for, like, a four-track cassette thing, you can get yourself a very good audio interface, the likes of these, the Lexicons, some of the smaller M-Audio ones and the Rolands here. You know, starting from around €90, you'll get yourself a good audio interface. You can buy, well, you can use any type of microphone, but you'll get yourself a good condenser mic for, like, you know, £100. And that's you. You get your software with your interface, and you've got your virtual studio then. Then you have all these little pocket jobs, like the Zoom H series, the H1, the H2, and now the H4. The H4 has become the video person's weapon of choice as well, you know. I recently did, I have a little acoustic band, the Sacre Blues band, just to get a plug in there. And we did a recording for the Kjell Train thing here last week, and the guy was here with his HD video camera and his little H4 recording the sound, and the sound quality from the H4 is unreal. I mean, it's, you know, very, very impressive.
As John mentions, a lot of bands are recording themselves. We talked to Polyphonic X, C-Fit and Axial Symmetry about recording themselves.
Well, with our stuff, we can, because electronic, I can do all of it from my house. Like, we record everything there. We've recorded an album. We released it there during the summer. And we've recorded the whole thing and mastered it ourselves. So it's quite handy that way. We don't have massive costs for rehearsal and stuff like that. It's all, you know, do it ourselves.
That is kind of, there's a lot of musicians doing that these days, but where do you learn the skills to do that?
Well, for the recording, I just got those programs about 2 years ago, and I had no clue, and I've just kind of basically been teaching myself how to use them and watch a few tutorials online and just kind of getting into it that way. Like, when you're rushed, when you've, say, 8 days to go and record in the studio, like, you're in there, you're rushing with everything, there's always going to be one thing when you come home and you're listening, I should have done that different. But when we spent months mixing the stuff, and you can just every day go, I actually don't like that, and you can change it right up to the end. Like, it's way easier to work like that. But I remember years ago when I was in a metal band, we recorded, and yeah, it was the same thing. We spent a lot of money for a couple of days recording, and we didn't even get near as good quality as we're able to get now. It's because all the programs and the software, it's become way, way easier for people to do it by themselves.
The majority, all vocals and guitars and bass would be done pretty much in my house.
Yeah.
Like, because I've, with my old band and with this band, we've been recording and figuring out techniques for fucking years, so like I prefer the vocals that I do in my linen cupboard to ones that I do in a studio. And plus you have as much time as you want and you can, you know, kind of freak out and do 400 takes. And
well, that's the thing, I suppose, the one really great, it's a blessing and a curse in many ways. You are blessed with all this time to really, you know, get the perfect take and try so many new ideas.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure we've both played in bands and recorded stuff in the past where you just wished, you know, you got down on your knees and prayed to whatever God you wanted that you could have one more take of a guitar line or one more hour to tweak a drum sound or something. And with this, you have that, but there's, you do need to rein that in at some point as well. It's the other side of it.
It can go a bit apocalypse now.
Oh, yeah, it really does.
Every band that seems to come out, whether it's metal or actually rock or indie, they all seem to be kind of doing a bit of a DIY job.
Yeah.
That's what I've been picking up on most of it.
It is cheaper.
It is cheaper, and it's easy to kind of get your hands on some little, you know, basic pieces to record.
Mm-hmm.
When you're at home or... yeah, if you're at home, basically, yeah, doing it yourself, it's easy to get your hands on these little things to start off with. And that's what we do. We've been very fortunate to kind of, like, come from musical families and things like that.
Mm.
So, like, all our relatives would have good equipment because they've had time to experiment, so they let me borrow of it so I can use it at home, you know?
Well, that's really cool.
All the walls go crazy. Everything seems to me. Everything's for taste. Twisted minds control it. Do you think I'm lying?
When a band has recorded and mixed an album, the next step in the chain is to get it mastered. I talked to Aidan Foley of Master Labs and he explained what mastering is.
It's getting the most out of it musically and sonically. You know, it's not just sonically. You can't just, if you're trying to put something, some high fidelity into something that doesn't have it, it's going to sound even worse. So it's understanding the music, trying to understand the rhythm, understand why it was mixed that way, and then just enhancing that and bringing it to a place where it's going to be playable across as many platforms as possible and sit back to back with other music in that genre and sound natural and as if, wow, it's just, that was brilliant, you know? They don't know why it was brilliant, but it's, so it brings it out there. Harmonics, a lot of careful tone control, and just bringing the best out. Make sure we can hear the vocals if they need to be heard. I mean, if it's a country band and it's going to be played on Tip FM and all the rest of it, it's actually got to have a certain kind of sound. But you can't just force the track in there. So you master it to bring out the best of it. But underneath all that, you know, listen, it's got to have more bounce to it. That kick drum is massive. It's got to be more on the backbeat, and the vocals have got to be up. I'm just giving. I don't know why country music, but I like it very much. But then you work to that. So you don't start off with that, and you don't have any reference, or you don't have a default country setting. as you're getting the most out of the track, fundamentally underlying you is, it's got to sound like Garth Brooks. It's gonna come out like after Garth Brooks' track, this track's coming. Mm-hmm. So it's got to have the vocals got to be as big, the bottom end's got to be as tight, clear. But saying that, when you do get a country track in, it's like, oh, cool, country, you know, done. I know how it sounds. But a lot of the stuff, say, like this record I'm working on now, there's no reference for it. Okay. It's its own entity. And it's got to be, so it doesn't have it's got to hit that target. It's not going to hit, it's just got to sound comfortable in its own skin, and that's it.
I asked Aidan for some positive and negative things commonly resulting from bands recording themselves.
The first one is kind of setting up, miking and setting up things right. That's something that comes with experience. And simple things like tuning the drum kit perfectly. So when you can just stick a microphone over the drum set and it could sound good, as opposed to 12 mics all going out of phase. And the problem is that one tom is dong, dong, and you know, it's a clank and bash and no matter. And then they'll probably spend about 3 weeks trying to EQ that drum set and gate it and chop it and edit it. And whereas it could have been done in an hour just by having, or just, I don't know, by experience, I suppose. So that's where they would lack in experience. The second thing would probably be in their monitoring or their mixing, getting too absorbed in it, spending too long overworking things and trying too hard, maybe not referencing other tracks or being experienced in using different monitors, or in the old days, be moving stuff from studio to studio. We tracked it here, I'm going to mix it in this mixing room, and then you master it in a mastering room. So you kind of always, there's a link there, you know? So I suppose those would be the kind of, and there's thirdly, I suppose the other one we get a lot of, which I have to send back, are on technical grounds. Like an experienced engineer would have a very clearly in phase mix with a very good dynamic range and quite a good tonal balance. Whereas we get stuff which is could be completely out of phase. People couldn't even hear it. They don't even have a phase meter, and you don't expect a young, inexperienced engineer to be sitting there and doing that, or to be able to have the ability to listen to phase or to catch it when it's happening, you know. And then distortion or over limiting is a maximizing. But that's actually, to be honest, in the last year or two, that's been a less and less and less of a problem. I mean, it used to be a 4 or 5 years ago when people were pushing it out. It was just 6 years ago. But I think there's been a good understanding about dynamics in the last 2 years. I felt people want their records lower. In fact, they're telling me, we don't want it that loud, Aidan. Please, just bring it back. I'm like, great. What it does mean is people can be really hyper-creative, and they can spending time on in their own studio with no overhead costs. The studio clock's not ticking. Can start experimenting with sounds, developing ideas, all that kind of stuff. And what it means is that anyone who has any talent has an outlet. I mean, 10, 12 years ago, when there were three or four, maybe 15 years ago, three or four pro studios in town, Westland, Windmill, and then one other, which used to shift around before Grass Lodge got built, or kind of Sun was nowhere, you know, whatever. There was only that output coming out, you know. Everyone else had a four-track tape machine, something like that. So and someone wouldn't be able to afford to go into Windmill, couldn't get backing, couldn't get this, couldn't get funding. So now that creativity has been able to really come out. And if someone's got talent, it just jumps out, even on a home recording.
With the ability to record themselves, I wanted to get an opinion on whether there had been a quality drop in the content output.
There's a factor to a thousand of the amount of stuff coming out. So there's obviously going to be a dip in quality, because there used to be, if there's three major studios in town and everyone takes 3 to 4 weeks to make a record, there's only 50 albums coming out a year out of pro studios. Now with home recording, there's probably about 5,000 coming out. So just in economic terms, there's going to be a dip in quality. But I'd say that, when done right, I mean, if stuff is tracked in a studio and then it can be brought back to the home environment, overdubs done, guitars, vocals, that kind of stuff, and maybe the mixing then, and then going to a pro studio, there's not much of a dip. It's just getting a nice room to record in, the basic kind of, depending on the music as well, now we're talking about, you know, so it's electronic music, there's no point in going anywhere.
Irish Times journalist Jim Carroll shared his opinion.
On the issue, I suppose, of sound quality, I'm probably the wrong person to ask, because, you know, I don't notice it. I really, really don't. I listen to the music, and what I'm listening to for is I'm listening for a hook. I'm listening for something that kind of like sends a shiver down my back. I'm listening for something that gets the remaining hairs on the back of my head standing up. That's what I want. I don't care. It could be the most crappily recorded thing going. If it's got those qualities, I'm in. I'm in like Flynn. I mean, the best things I heard last year was Rosie Carney, and like, she was just simply a girl with an acoustic guitar singing into a microphone, and it was just incredible. It was the song and the art did it for me. It's not the quality. A lot of kind of like sound engineers would kind of say it, but to be honest, most people's ears aren't that advanced, and I really don't think that the sound quality issue is as much of a kind of a bugbear as it was. Maybe to those whose ears have got perfect pitch and who've kind of like come up from a studio background, they may well do.
And Gib Cassidy of Elastic Witch Records shared his thoughts.
I definitely don't think it's a dip in quality anyway. It could be like on the contrary, in a way where people are getting the absolute most out of the you know, means to an end kind of thing. They're getting the absolute most out of what they've got. Whereas, you know, in the Celtic Tiger years, like really dire bands were just throwing loads of money to go into studios for a month and come out with garbage. Whereas, you know, that's not now always exceptions to the rule, but now you can hear people who are kind of doing everything themselves, recording themselves, getting exactly, you know, doing it in their own time, getting exactly the way they want it to sound and the way ultimately it should sound. So, you know, there's, you know, it's means to an end, you know, and like I certainly think there's the quality of music around now is way better than what it was, say, during the Celtic Tiger years.
I asked Gabe what it's like running a record shop in Abbey Street in 2013.
It's a challenge, obviously. Like, I set it up in the middle of an economic downturn at a time when music sales were plummeting worldwide, and I'm still here. So I guess that's a little small victory in itself. But yeah, I love doing it. Like, I get to hear loads of music that I probably wouldn't have heard before. I get to, you know, in turn recommend some stuff to people who I think would be into certain genres and certain things. Yeah, it's a challenge. Like, I'm not really making any serious money out of it. Like, it's turning profit, and but only barely so, you know. But like, as long as it continues to turn profit, I'm gonna do it. And you know, that's kind of sense with any business. It takes a while for it to kind of I guess to kind of, I don't know, to build it, my customer base and all. Like, I do a very specific thing that not really many other places do. And people will always, for me, they'll always want to buy records. Like, whether they've got the money to do so is the other thing. Like, people talk about, again, back to the whole digital downloading, killing music, yeah, all that thing. Like, people are always banging on about that. But, like, essentially, if people had more money to buy music, they would, you know, and like, let's hope we're not in this slump for forever, you know what I mean? And we'll see how it goes. It's interesting times, uncertain times, but interesting times. Like, I actually make money from Twitter sometimes. Like, I can be on my way into town on a bus and someone will go, oh, do you have such and such a record? And I'll get back to them, yeah. And they'll be into me later that afternoon buying it, you know? It's funny, again, that wouldn't have been able to happen when, you know, like 15 years ago, like, you wouldn't have had that at all. Like, so yeah, I think that's kind of cool, you know. Or say if a promoter I know books a gig and the band is playing in October, I can go, oh yeah, I've got this guy's record in, or this band's record, or this girl's record. And, you know, people will often go, all right, excellent, you know, check that out. And, you know, it's all kind of linking things one off the other. Like, there's blogs like Harmless Noise and Niler 9, and, you know, they would often, like, you know, help spread the word about stuff that I'm doing, and or I'd kind of link their sites to stuff that's relevant to what I'm doing. So, like, I would sell mostly from the shop rather than online. I do have an online shop as well, but I would mostly sell from the shop itself. But again, that's a lot of my customers are people who want to come in and have a chat about what they're buying and have a face at the end of it, rather than just, you know, a postman putting a delivery note through their letterbox.
The Hot Sprockets tell me about some other stores that stock independent music in Dublin.
Freebird, like, I think they were the first ones, were they, to sell our things? Yeah, they just kind of, yeah, they sell, you'd go in, you'd be able to find loads of independent artists, like CDs, or whether they put stuff on vinyl, they usually should have it. Or even if you talk to them there and ask them about that certain Irish band, they'll probably be like, oh yeah, he'll probably be able to tell you where to get it, or he might have it. Yeah. Then a lot of bands, like, you sell their stuff online as well. You can sell your stuff online or sell your stuff at gigs mostly. And I think Tower Records take them in as well. And I think there's a few little spots down in the country that we haven't really hit up yet, but we will soon.
Rage Records.
Oh yeah, Rage. As well, yeah.
It's on Fade Street there beside Hogan's. Freebird is in the secret bookstore on Exchequer Street, just because some people don't know where it is. It's a cool spot. And then, yeah, there's ones in the country, but we actually haven't really got out to them yet. But yeah, it is. It's a really good way to support Irish music as well, because anyone who goes into them, like, we always go, that's where we shop in them. Like, the people who go to them are like music lovers as well. So. J'ai écouté mes petites voix.
So, when bands have made the music, I wanted to find out how they share it with the world. I began by asking John if people still hang posters in his shop.
A bit of both. We do. I mean, you'll see up beside the door there, you'll see there's always posters up for stuff. Particularly because we've got the venues on our doorsteps and stuff like that, people are aware that someone who's walking past here in the evening will see a poster for a gig that's happening two doors down. So it's, you know, it's in their interest to have one up.
Because, like, that's how we know of gigs from posters, because we never see it on, like, posts or anything on Facebook. But the majority go through Facebook now. Yeah, it's crazy.
Facebook is really big, but I think the biggest one of all is... YouTube, yeah. So that's why we tried to make good videos, because the whole world is on Facebook as well, but YouTube was like even there before that, and it's just quick. You get the music, you get the video, and everyone can just everyone's like, oh, I see YouTube, blah blah blah. Yeah. So it's probably the biggest outlet for bands.
Rachel McCormick and Dee from Band 66 told me how they promote themselves.
Vandalism, and you just type in your password and you can download it. It's an app, like as I said, it goes all over the world. I signed up to it and you can basically put all your videos, all your audio, all your SoundCloud, and I mean I'm only on it 8 months and I have 24,000 hits on it, you know, and it's just, I mean, it's been like, you know, all my music has been heard in Poland, like, you know, Russia, Australia, America. It's a great way to get your music out there, you know. My favorite one now at the minute is Instagram. I love Instagram. It's fun. You can send loads of videos up, and it's quick and it's easy. Twitter is quick as well. So I mean, you're not sitting on it all day, looking at all of the news feeds. But Facebook still seems to be leading the way, you know, for getting gigs, getting artists out there. It's a great way for an artist to get in touch with anybody.
The internet is great. It offers an awful lot of opportunity and assistance or whatever that you can plug in and people can see what you're doing. But then you have, by promoting on internet sites, often your music is going out there for free, and so people aren't buying it. And I think that's a problem. Music isn't selling and it's very hard to find an outlet where bands aren't gigging as much because people aren't going out as much.
Yeah.
And then the demise of the CD as well, which I'm very sad about myself.
Yeah.
You know, it's all affecting. And then just downloads, they can be done illegally or they can be just got off sites and whatever. So that's a bit of a problem. We're really trying to figure out what to do about that.
The only problem with it is that, you know, you can download, illegally. And I mean, I Googled myself there last night, as you do, and I found my whole album and I found audio free. So I mean, there's always a battle against that as well. There always will that. There will always be a battle against, the internet downloads and stuff. But I mean, again, I'm not saying that it's a great way, but it's just how the world is going now.
We've taken two areas. One, we've on Refurb Nation, which now we're currently number one in Dublin on Refurb Alternative Rock charts and number two in Ireland. So we're very proud to have got that far on that.
Yeah.
And that offers sales. You can have a store on there and sell your stuff, and you can offer to be listened to for free or restricted, or you can give a song as a free download. So it is a good publicity one. It's a good global publicity one.
And using these, then, I guess people can interact with you as well.
Well, that's it. You can. And sometimes maybe just put out a post looking for information and build up a bit of rapport that way, and then be able to made connections with the internet that we can share information I found this great site, have a look at it, and that person would come back with something else, that sort of way. So, and this be globally as such, not just within Ireland.
Yeah.
We were nominated for a few awards in the MRU there just before Christmas, and it was all the other bands that did know their music, know them well, and it was this fellow support going on. It wasn't really who won or who didn't, it was all that we were all getting recognition and, you know, there's a bit of help out there that is somebody is out there promoting the unsigned and not promoting the smaller band.
Statics told us some ways they promote their music.
Facebook, Twitter, anywhere, SoundCloud. Let's put it all up there.
And yeah. Would you be the type of band who would, I guess, announce the gigs, what your Facebook and all is, but would you hand out flyers or like give out stuff like that? Or
yeah, we actually still do that. We do both. Like, do I you? Think you still need to do a bit of both, yeah.
Yeah, the gigs leading up to the actual, like if we're doing a big gig, the gigs leading up to them big gigs would hand out flyers for the main one that we're playing. So
all right.
Try to get as many out as you can. Like,
yeah.
Sure, you hit every avenue that you can. Facebook thing. The more places that you put yourself out there, the more return you're going to get in the end. Like, so I think it's best to try go down every avenue that you can, really.
That's all for this programme. We'd like to thank everybody who took part in this broadcast. We'd also like to thank Mir FM and the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland for their continued support. In this programme, we heard music from CFIT, Polyphonic X, Axial Symmetry, the Sacra Blues Band and Band 66. For more information, see nearfm.ie/loversoflife.
This programme was made with the support of the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland.